7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with an amazing Croc podcast. Amazing because of me? No. Amazing because of Angel Santana? Maybe. But really amazing because of you guys, because you guys are the most important thing in our lives. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. How are you, my dear friend?
Croc Nation, March is upon us, and we are officially on the new season of the Croc Podcast as we have embarked on a new month and a new season.
Angel, I don't even know how many years we've been doing this. Is this our third year?
This right now is actually our fourth season, my friend.
Wow. We've been doing this a long time, Angel.
That's it. I'm excited to get started. I'm excited for a new season. And what better way than to launch something that I know you just said offline is near and dear to your heart.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to just give a quick shout out to our dear Lord and Savior and Creator for letting us have the ability to do these podcasts for our survivors/thrivers.
Absolutely.
So Angel, a couple of just some, what would you say, some business, or what would you say, some cleanups or some agenda items just for our listeners. I'm very, very excited because for the next couple of weeks, we're going to have some pretty high power guests on the podcast. So maybe it's an advertisement or maybe it's a little bit of an ad, but we're going to have a cancer doula on next week. What is a cancer doula? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. I am very impressed with this young lady who's tremendous, and I'm really excited to have her on. We'll try to get her on for 2 episodes. And guess who's coming back to dinner? Guess who's coming home for dinner?
Oh, man.
Dr. Len Barry will be with us, and he is one of the heavy hitters of healthcare policy. And, you know, I'm going to embarrass him a little bit because Len is a retired professor of business and economics who's been, you know, internationally recognized for his work in healthcare. And what he does is he really, we're trying to make life better for our patients on the medical side. Len is trying to make life better for our survivor thrivers by creating more intuitive cancer centers, warmer cancer centers that basically cater to the patient, you know, not to the doctor, health systems that care about people and don't care about money. Len has created a career of over 60 years, I'm sure, of doing nothing but trying to make the process for the not just the cancer survivor thriver, but all patients to make their healthcare more streamlined, more efficient, better quality, and with better outcomes. So I'm really excited to have Len back. So Angel, we have a couple of weeks of really having to do our homework as we get some really world-class specialists to talk to our survivor thrivers.
Absolutely. And it's a long awaited return for Len. We, you know, he was one of our very first. So to have him return is going to be awesome. You know, I'm looking forward to it.
And just a warning, Len, in case you're listening to this personal episode, we may be in year four, but we're still the same knuckleheads that you met in year one.
So true.
So Angel, I was just, you know, I was doing a consult last week and maybe a couple of weeks ago. And you know the way I am. I'm always about feedback. And when I see a patient who's on treatment in a hallway, I make sure I take them aside and I say, "Hey, Angel, how you doing? Are you doing okay with your treatment? You having any trouble?" And I even say to them, I say, "You know, is everyone here treating you well? Are you getting treated well here? Are you being treated with respect and dignity?" That's my line. And I listen and I, you know, and 99.99999 times, you know, I hear everything is perfect. The staff is amazing, blah, 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 blah. And then I was doing a consult and I take, you know, a lot of pride in our consults because that's kind of the first time I'm meeting a patient, a cancer survivor thriver. And I think it's important to really go out of your way to make that experience really a positive experience for them. And it just kind of came out of my mouth. I'm not exactly sure, you know, why. It just sort of happened, but it felt right. and I started doing it, and it was very simple. I just said, "Hey, how was your consult? Were you satisfied with your consult?" And they kind of were taken back a little bit and said, "You mean today's consult?" I go, "Yeah, the consult that we just did." And they looked back at me and they kind of looked at me with wide eyes and said, "Thank you for asking that. No one's ever asked me that before." And they said, "You know what? I really did enjoy this consult. I learned a ton. Thank you for asking me." And I thought, what a great way to have a podcast about having our caregivers actually try to assess if their initial visitation, their consultation visitation, was successful for the patient. And I thought, well, let's do a podcast on it. So even though this podcast has a little bit of everything in some of our old podcasts put together, I thought it was a little bit, it was original, and I thought that would be a good topic. Angel, your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's interesting that what you're discussing is something that I'm actually going through on my end, and why I'm getting directors and administrators down to where I work, because I feel like everybody needs to communicate. And when you get this type of feedback, like you just said, it really hones in on what bedside manner and good patient care is all about.
Yeah, and I want to just take a step back because I did do some research on the subject, because and there is no research on this subject. Of course, something that I hit on is completely never been looked at. But what I did find is when people talk about patients having a satisfying experience with their physicians or whatever, I was really and again, I was so saddened, and maybe saddened is the wrong word. I was actually angered. Because all the articles have to do with how, like, they would have all of these social media, all this social media baloney, malarkey, right? And they would only care about the doctor's office, right? They would only care about whether or not the doctor's office was looked at in a favorable way. They only looked at whether the doctor's office, was getting, what did you call it, Angel? Like the thumbs up?
Yes, thumbs up.
It was only about, what was good for the office and how they looked, to people as a consumer, rather than the scariness. That's not a word, we make them up, but the absolute terror a patient has going into a doctor's office, and the absolute fear, and rather than concentrating on that, they decided instead to concentrate, on just themselves. So you could probably say it better than I can. When they like me on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, maybe you could clarify that a little bit.
It's all about following. It's all about making sure that you get that thumbs up of recognition, letting you know that you are all right by your audience, and that you are promoting within each other, but more importantly, within the actual app or application that you're in.
Yeah, exactly. And you understand what I say, right? That
Yeah, it's
I
kind of like a
want
pat on the
to let
back.
everybody knows that it's has nothing to do with that, right?
Yeah, it's
That
kind of like a pat on the back in the industry of the internet.
exactly. Okay, cool. So we're on the same page. So let's get now with all of that, malarkey, let's get to business. So your first visit with your oncologist is sort of like a first date, and I don't mean that in any way, with any overtones of intimacy or anything like that, but it is. I mean, you're going to meet someone you've never met before. You heard things about them. You might have heard, you obviously are going to go there because you heard good things about them. So you're hoping that that's true. So let's do a deep dive into the subject. So number one, we're going to talk about what you're expecting when you're going into that consult, and then we're going to sort of look at what you actually deserve, because as survivor thrivers, you deserve a lot. You deserve a lot more than you actually think, because unfortunately, the medical profession has set standards so low as far as, like, even a doctor, like, even being remotely nice to you. You might think, "Oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. The doctor called, knew my name," or, "Oh my God, I didn't have to wait 3 hours. I only had to wait 2 hours." So this podcast is going to blow all that out of the water. We're going to change the bar. We're going to raise the bar for when you go in to see a doctor. We're going to raise the bar where that consult has to be at such a high level. Otherwise, I do not want you to be satisfied with that consult, whether it's me or any of my colleagues. I want to make sure you guys are getting what you deserve. So the good news, Angel, is that the environment is changing. I mean, that whole, this is all about the doctor and you're lucky to get an appointment and you're going to come in when we tell you to come in and we don't really care whether you come in or not. I think that's changing. And I, as someone who's a father of two young kids and also a patient as well, you know, do you notice that too, that there is sort of more of a push toward patient centricity?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go through the 10. Remember, we have the 10 commandments. We're going to talk about the 10 commandments of what you deserve in a consultation. So at the end of the consultation, when your doctor asks you, you know, hey, how were you satisfied with today's consultation? You can honestly look them in the eye and say, yeah, I really did. I learned a lot, doc. So let's go to number one, Angel. You need to have, you could be the most compassionate, kind, wonderful doctors in the entire world, and you could have a terrible staff around you and a terrible office. So we're going to start number one out with your office, specifically the front desk. From the minute a person, you know, answers the phone that you call, what your experience is. And I can use an example of when I was young. So one of the people that influenced me to be a doctor was my grandfather's doctor. His name was Dr. Addio. Dr. Addio was a young doctor. He was very smart. He was very warm. He was very, like, when you walked into the office and talked to Dr. Addio, you just felt so much faith in him and so much, you know, you just felt great about things. And the problem with Dr. Addio, Angel, was his front desk was terrible. Like, you couldn't get through to him. He had a couple of blockers. You know what I mean by a blocker? Someone who was absolutely trying to protect him from his patients or keep him distance from his patients. He had a terrible head nurse. I used to call her Nurse Ratchet. And it was so sad because he was so great and he was such a great practitioner, but like just getting in to see him was like a big deal. So there's a lot of power in your front desk. There's a lot of power in what are the things that these people are saying, because whatever comes out of their mouth is a reflection on you. So if you call a doctor's office and they start telling you how busy they are or that they're already double booked or what a inconvenience it is for them to try to get you in before a holiday or a vacation, you know, these are all red flags. Number two, does the office respect your time and your life? Cancer, as we know, as our survivor thrivers know, is going to blow your life up enough. You don't need to have your cancer doctor add to that by making you try to fit in, you know, to whatever's convenient for them. So convenience the survivor, even at the inconvenience of the office. If you feel that you're being convenienced, then you just check box number two as a nice check box. Also, the ease of your appointment. So when you walk in the door, do you feel welcome? And I made up another word, Angel, welcomeness. Do you feel welcomeness when you walk into an office? Do you feel when you walk in, there's someone there? Because you don't know what's going on. You're walking into a strange office. You know, what do you know? Are you in the right office? You don't even know if you're in the right office or not. Is there someone there to say, hi, how are you? Welcome. You must be Mr. Santana. We were expecting you. Did you have any trouble getting here? Did you get lost? Did you have trouble parking? Did you get a close spot? It's so nice to see you. I was looking forward to meeting you. You know, do you feel that sense of welcomeness? And if you do, let's check the box. Number four, respect for the environment. I can't tell you how many times in my career of 40 years, whether I was a third year clerk or a medical student doing a rotation, how many offices I went into that were filthy, dirty. Doctors, as we know, are not the most money spending sort, and sometimes they cut corners where they shouldn't. Angel, would you agree walking into a doctor's office, that place should be spick and span?
Absolutely. You want to be able to drop something and be able to actually still be okay with eating it.
Exactly. You want to eat off of the floor. And I can't say that a lot of these offices are that way. Also, now, you know, here, this is coming from a guy who wears sports jerseys, but you want to make sure the office has some sense of tastefulness. Now, you know, taste, and having a daughter who's an interior designer, you know, and probably having little taste myself, I do know the difference between good taste and bad taste. So I want to make sure that when you walk in there, or you want to make sure when you walk in there, you feel that you're at least in a warm environment, an environment that is conducive to making you feel that, hey, someone actually thought about, you know, putting a piano here, or somebody actually thought about, you know, the design of these chairs or the colors of the walls. You don't want to walk into a place that, you know, the doctor and his brother-in-law came in on a Saturday and painted everything white, and then just went down to, you know, Sam's Club and picked up some folding chairs. You know, you don't want that kind of office. And you want to make sure that, you know, that medical office, someone took pride, you know, in making that office what it is for you guys. It's not for the doctors, not for the nurses, it's not for the front desk. It should be pride of what they're presenting for you guys. And Angel, what is my favorite whole part of an entire cancer center? It's the waiting room. I think our first Croc podcast was about the waiting room. And to me, that's the litmus test, right? And it brings everything together. Is it welcoming? Do you feel welcomed by the staff? Do you feel welcomed by the actual waiting room? Do you feel that you're in a sea of loving, you know, survivors, or do you feel isolated like you're in your own lifeboat? Do you feel that the environment is such that everyone is separated from each other? I think COVID and social distancing, you know, did a bit to isolate us. But do you feel a kinship? You know, and we're going to do a podcast soon on what I call the Breakfast Club. I found two other patients that became very close during their time together who just happened to finish simultaneously today. We'll talk about that in one of our future podcasts. But that waiting room, that's a litmus test. And you do remember my love of the waiting room. Yeah, Angel?
Oh, yeah. You stole my thunder. I already had that ready to go for my ending, but that's okay. I'll have another shot at it.
There you go. Number five, transition to the clinic. So there's that transition time between when you're in the waiting room until you get called into the clinic. Are you being called into the clinic in a timely manner? That's really important. We don't want you to wait. Forget about 3 hours. I don't want you waiting 15 minutes in a waiting room. I want you in. I want you, you know, to get into the waiting room, you know, vibe, but then I want you out of there. I want you into a room as quickly as possible. Angel, how about this? Really important, even as people who work in a healthcare system, I really think it's a really good indicator of what kind of environment you're working in when you pass someone in the hallway. So say you're a survivor thriver and it's your first appointment, as we're specifying, and you're walking in the hallway and you see three nurses walking down the hall. Do they look at you? Do they ignore you? Do they say, good morning, welcome, nice to see you? You know, do you feel like there's like at least acknowledgement of your existence, or do you feel that you're just invisible? I call that comfortability. Again, made that work up too, right? Made that word up too. But you want to make sure that you feel, you know, that you're in a warm and caring place. And then there's the handoff to the medical assistant. So you've been medically assistant. That's another phrase I just made up. So you have to get your weight done. In my case, I hate that. It's like the worst. And then you got to get your blood pressure taken and your pulse rate and all that kind of stuff, your pulse ox. And then they ask you to change your clothes into a gown. You know, my mother, who had also a time with weight throughout her whole life, she was always so mortified about the small gowns that they had in the rooms, and the paper gowns that cost nothing. And then she would try to put them on and they would tear. And she probably felt terrible, where her whole body was like sticking out everywhere. And she made me promise that I would always have big size gowns for people, and I've kept that promise. But that these are the little things that mean so much to your consult and your experience. And the other thing is, what is your banter, or the repartee that you have with the medical assistant, with the nurses, with the front desk, and with the people that are walking you from place to place, you know, going to your different appointments to see your doctor? Is it warm? Is it canned? Is it silent? Do they say nothing? Do they try to make you feel comfortable? Do they try to make you feel less anxious? Do they try to make you feel less fearful? You know, I find that to be very important as well. And then it is, of course, your first encounter with the doctor. Is your first impression that of warmth or of coldness? Do you feel that you have someone who is welcoming, or do you have that big stiff white coat that's trying to keep a distance from you? Do you get a sense of compassion from the practitioner, or your first instinct, your blink instinct? Or do you feel that they're just ambivalent and they couldn't care less whether it was you sitting in that chair or it could be any one of a million different survivor thrivers? Do you look at their body language? Do you look at to see if they're making eye contact with you? Do you look to see if they're looking at you or the computer? Do you feel a sense of genuineness? Do you feel like a sense of realness? Do you feel that they're really present and there for you and care about you? Do you feel that they're confident? Do you feel like, can you feel the confidence in your practitioner? Can you could sense it, you could smell it, you could taste it? Or do you feel that they're reticent or they're afraid? And again, the sidebar, right? We just did a podcast last week about, you know, what patients want in doctors' dress. And, you know, me with the jerseys, you know, so it was really interesting for me to do a literature search and looking at patient preference in regard to the difference between formal wear, or, you know, white coats or scrubs or casual wear. And if you guys want to hear more about that, Angel, we're going to direct them to that podcast last week. They can listen to it right from the computer. The other thing is, do you feel that your doctor is relaxed, or you feel that they're tense? Do you feel that they see you as a whole person, or do you feel that they see you only as the body part that's affected with the cancer? And do they want to know about you? Again, another podcast that we've done. Does your doctor or caregiver, do they, you know, do they ask you anything personal? Do they want to know a little bit about you? We did a podcast on, you know, I know everything about your left breast, Mrs. Smith, but I don't know anything about you. Or I know everything about your prostate, Mr. Jones, but tell me a little bit something about you. Or, hey, Mr. Jefferson, you're 88 years old. You must have a few stories to tell me. You know, do your doctors, do they try to get to know you as people? Number 7 is the consult itself. Let's start with 7A. We'll first start about the interview. So the interview is fact-finding. Is it easy for you guys, or do you feel like you're taking a test? Is there just too much paperwork that you have to do? Do you feel like you're, you know, that everything is so complex? And Angel, you know what the big mistake is here? The mistake is that this is being done more for record keeping than for the patient's, you know, care, or for their safety, you know, or for quality. They're trying to keep compliant. They're trying to be, you know, making sure that they dot their I's and cross their T's for billing so they get reimbursed. It's really not about the patient, even though it should be about the patient. When you go into a doctor's office, Angel, do you feel that with all that paperwork?
Yes. And it also makes it feel like you're just another number.
Exactly. And what I want you guys to do before you check this box off is that, do you feel this pressure, or do you feel that the process is for you, or do you feel that the process is for the office? 7B, the physical examination. This is huge. So the physical examination, especially the first time you're meeting a practitioner, you know, this is a very intimate situation where someone you've never met before, someone you know nothing about, someone you don't know other than they have a medical degree, they're going to ask you to disrobe, and they're going to see parts of you that you're probably your spouse hasn't even seen in like 30 years, right? So there's a process, and it's a very strict process. And they teach us this, you know, from the minute we walk into medical school to the, you know, to the day we hang up, you know, our stethoscope. There's an actual process of how you perform a physical examination, how you start from the head and work yourself down, how you stay on the right side of the patient rather than the left side, because the liver's on the right side and it makes it easy. You don't have to lean over the patient to palpate the liver. You have to make sure that a patient is gowned, and also there's drapes. So if you're examining a breast, you just take, and I have everyone open to the back. All other doctors' offices I know is open to the front where everything's hanging out. If you keep the gown open to the back, you could just slide an arm out, examine a part, put the arm back in, go to the other side, do the same thing. So many doctors don't use sheets. When you lay someone down and you want to examine their abdomen and they have no clothes on underneath, no underwear, it's just them and their body. Basically what you do is you don't raise the gown to expose their genitals without having a sheet over. So when you lift up the gown, then you could palpate the abdomen. The only thing that is exposed is the abdomen. Then you bring the gown down and then you go to the groin, but you just expose the part of the groin that you're examining, and then the other side. And even when you get to the intimate exams, like the rectal exams and the GYN exams, you know, even that has a process where it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be, you know, comfortable, but there's a way that you can do it. You know, are you going to have somebody just pull their pants down and then you're going to do a rectal exam, or are you going to completely keep them covered, except the small opening where you could do your exam? Do they really care about like how they do their exam? Are they using, you know, cold jelly, or do they have a warmer where the jelly is warmed? Do they use like absolutely the most like standard speculum, or do they have different size speculums where if your anatomy is small, there's a small speculum. If your anatomy isn't, then there's a bigger speculum. Does the doctor bother to anesthetize your nose if they're going to do a head neck exam? Or do they just shove that thing in your nose and basically you feel like you just, you know, ate, you know, a gallon of frozen ice cream and you got brain freeze, and then they pull it out? Like, do they actually care? Or are they trying to do it as gently as possible? So this convention, as I said, Angel, is paramount, especially when it comes to the specialty exams where our survivor thrivers feel the most vulnerable. 7C, teaching. This is huge. I don't think a consult is a consult unless your doctor starts by talking to you about your cancer, giving you the natural history of your cancer, giving you a recap of where your cancer was 30 years ago and where it is now, and the history of the management of your cancer. I don't think it's a consult if they don't tell you what your stage is, if they don't share the data. I love showing patients their x-rays or going through their blood work or showing them their labs or whatever, because they feel part of this. This is all about shared decision-making. We even did, Angel, a full module on shared decision-making. Your doctor has to tell you what the intent is of treatment. Is the intent curative? Is the intent palliative? Is the intent for symptom control? You know, how many patients leave an office and have no idea what their stage is or why the doctors are doing what they're doing? It's not a consult if your doctor doesn't tell you all alternatives of care, even if there's aspects of care that they don't even do in that office, but they have to send you out for. Then you have to talk about the logistics. You have to talk about what your policy is about renewing medications and your hours of treatment. And go through a day in a life. You know, we do a thing called the day in a life where the nursing staff basically goes through the entire day of what their day would be like with radiation therapy. What time they come in, if they have any special preparations, if they have to do a bowel prep or whatever. And then there's the whole process of doing a side effect profile. And the side effect profile is very crucial because everyone has to do what's called an informed consent. You can't sign a, I mean, so many, I can't tell you what percentage of practitioners have patients sign a consent without even telling them what the side effects are. So the whole point of an informed consent is for you to go through the acute side effects, the side effects that happen during the treatment, and the long-term side effects or the chances of long-term side effects of things that could happen weeks or months or years after the treatment is over. And then and only then should a consent be signed. Be very supportive of patients if they want to take notes or if they want to have a family member call in. And I have had many, many patients, and I know a lot of my colleagues don't like this, do videography actually with their phone, videotape the consultation. And I'm sure lawyers don't like that either, but if you're really confident with what you're doing, then you should be able to do that. You have to go through if there's any testing that still needs to be done, any extra x-rays. Mr. Smith, thank you. Here's your PET scan, but this PET scan is from October. Here's what was happening in October. I can't really treat you effectively until I have a more recent picture of what's going on. So I'd like to order another PET scan, or I'd like to get an MRI because there's unclarity in this region here that I would like to get more clarity on. And make sure you explain to them exactly what it is. And then, Angel, there's the special teaching. So with our prostate patients, I mentioned they have to do what's called the full bladder empty rectum protocol. The nurses go through the whole process. If you're going to get chemotherapy, you need to have a very long, detailed discussion with the educator about what chemotherapy is, what the chemotherapy is that you're going to be getting, how that chemotherapy is going to be given to you, all the side effects and all the issues and all the things to be careful of and all of the precautions to make it safe to go through these toxic treatments. Some of our patients become radioactive with radioactive materials. They have to go to nuclear medicine and be taught so they don't contaminate and put at risk, their young children or their family members or their coworkers or whatever. And I want you guys to always, before you check this box out, I want you to feel that your doctor isn't trying to sell you something during this consultation. They're not trying to bias you to choose their treatment over another treatment or to choose their office over another office. If you feel someone's trying to teach, trying to sell you something, then you're in the wrong place. Don't check that box off. Only check that box off if you feel that you have a legitimately caring practitioner who only wants to educate you, and that's the purpose of the consultation. It isn't to sell you. It isn't to, to try to tie you up and buy, a timeshare. It's about your health. It's about your survivorship. Number eight, questions. You have to make sure that you take your time and you answer all of the questions. You have to set up callbacks because you shouldn't push a patient to make a decision right there in front of you after you just spent an hour and a half going through this consultation. You need to offer every patient a second opinion, even if, in the old days, doctors would get so standoffish and would feel so insulted. They would feel so demeaned if someone asked for a second opinion. Don't feel that way. Actually, offer it, suggest it. If they feel it's necessary, then that's what they're going to do. And it makes them feel so much better. They feel like they have your blessing, to do their due diligence. And their due diligence is part of the consultation process. Involve the family. Make sure that if there's anybody in their family who has an expertise, there might be nurses, there might be doctors in the family, avail yourself to talk to them. And believe me, as a radiation oncologist, I had to deal with family member issues about things that were not to my expertise. I'm just like any other, schlub. I know about radiation oncology and about oncology, but I don't know anything about, heart disease or diabetes or whatever. And, I mean, I know enough. I mean, I know enough to be a doctor, but I don't know enough to be a specialist. Also, I would encourage every patient to have their case presented to a tumor board. So whatever your site of involvement is, your doctor should tell you that they're going to present this in front of a group of doctors in a prospective manner. And in English, that means to present your case before you've been treated, to get other opinions, to see, to make sure you're not missing anything or there's not a better way that you can be treated. And the other thing, Angel, you know, we did a podcast on this, how you can contact your medical team. Now, I encourage all practitioners to give their cell phones. I know a lot of people will not do that, and I respect that. I'm not telling you that I will put you down if you don't use your cell phone. But to me, that's the most accessible way to be reached. But if you have a way where people don't go into, you know, they're talking to an operator from another country, or they don't get connected, or they get disconnected, or they get put on hold forever and ever and ever, I want an Angel Santana on the other end of that line. I do not want to have somebody from wherever. I do not want to have a computer. I don't want to have any of that kind of sort of automated system. I want a person to direct me to my doctor. Number nine, ancillary access. At your consultation, have you been referred for further testing? Have you been sent for specific testing? Do you need any special teaching? Do you need to see the registered dietitian? All of our head and neck patients see dietary, speech and swallowing, dental. You know, how about our patients with erectile dysfunction? How about women in menopause? Do they get special treatment? Do they get special teaching to help with these things? Have you been referred to a support group? Have you been offered a guardian angel, another patient who's been through what you've been through, so you can discuss what's going to happen with someone who actually has just been through it? And last but not least, my friend, your blink. How did you like your consultation? Did all of these boxes get checked off? Did you check off out of the nine boxes, nine of them, or did you check off seven, or did you check off three? Or did you do good with the front desk, but you didn't do that good with the medical assistant? Maybe you didn't do good with the doctor. Because at the end of the day, Angel, you've just been asked out. Do you want to go on a second date? And I say, if you received everything that I said that you're deserving of, if you receive everything that we just mentioned, then the answer is yes. If the answer is no, guess what? No callback. You ghost that person and you go find another doctor. Angel Santana, your thoughts?
Wow. You know, you've given me a mouthful, so I'm going to do this. And this is actually very interesting. I'm going to steal a line from a person that I just dealt with this week. Everything revolves back to the very beginning. And what we have just done today is giving you a complete full circle, because on February 21st of 2021, we spoke about the waiting room. We spoke about how that first impression, that first direct reflection, that first opening of the door, that first phone call that we make is the one that sets the tone. We continue to explain to each and every one of you that the main reason someone feels better is because they feel welcomed. They feel they've been seen. They've been heard. They feel they've been valued. They feel they've been loved, and they have been supported. Remember that as you go into your waiting room and utilize these 10 commandments that will make you a better patient, knowledgeable, and of course, heard.
Angel Santana, wise words as always. Thank you for that beautiful, beautiful little dialogue there. Angel, we're going to end today's podcast in a way that we always do. We're going to give a little bit of a pep talk. So my pep talk is as follows. So you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've made an appointment with an oncologist that has a really good reputation. When you go into that consultation, I don't want you to think that you're not deserving of anything less than what we just spent the last 30 minutes on. I do not want you to think that you're the lucky one that got an appointment to see this amazing specialist. I do not want you to think that even if you have to wait 30 minutes or 40 minutes or an hour, that that's an okay thing. I don't want you to think that if you get sassed by the front desk or you have a hard time making an appointment, that that's a good thing. I don't want you to go into a dirty office and think that's okay. I don't want you to go in and be ignored by the people walking by you in the hallways. I don't want you to go into a room and be thrown into a gown that's too small for you, or it's all full of paper and it just rips. I don't want you to go in a room where you're disrobed with impunity, with residents and interns and medical students looking at your naked body while you're afraid and you're vulnerable. I don't want you to accept any doctor who doesn't look at you in the eyes. I don't want you to accept the doctor who only looks at their computer. I don't want you to accept anything less than perfect teaching, where you leave there knowing everything you need to know about your cancer, knowing everything you need to know about the intention of your treatments, to know everything you need to know about alternatives of care, to be offered a second opinion, to know every side effect and feel secure in signing a consent, to feel confident in the confidence of your doctors, to feel faith in the healing power of your doctors and your medical team. I don't want you to ever not have an access to a resource that you need, whether it be a support group, whether it be a guardian angel, whether it be a registered dietitian or a dentist or a speech and swallow expert. I don't ever want you to feel that you're not deserving of everything that we talked about today, because guess what? You are. And you are to us, to the Kroc organization, the most important thing in the entire universe. So as far as I'm concerned, not only are you deserving of all those things, you need to demand all those things. So in closing, we will close out with a prayer and a blessing. And it's the same one we use every week. And it starts like this. Here at Kroc, on behalf of Angel Santana, Rod Freeman, the entire board of directors, we adore you, we respect you, and we want you to have a great survivorship. We wish you all the blessings in the world, but specifically, we wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.